You're listening to a podcast of Spurious Morality. Hello and welcome to a podcast of Spurious Morality. I'm Johnston, and with me this week I have Jimmy.
Hello.
And I have Greg.
Hello, friends.
And we're here to talk about the second half of season 19. So we've talked about the first half, and now we're going to pick up at the visitation. So let's dive straight in. We did all of the What's Our Favourite Waffle last time, so we're going to go straight for it. The Visitation, which is sort of this, it's a bit of a throwback, really. It's kind of like mid-70s Doctor Who, but produced in the early 80s. It's sort of 5 years after its time. I can totally see this being part of season 15 and fitting in quite comfortably, but instead it's here. I believe this is because Eric Saward hadn't really been watching Doctor Who for a while and kind of assumed it was as it was when he last watched it. It's a very sort of, I don't know, I guess it's in the vein of something like Image of the Fendal, Horror of Fang Rock, that kind of thing. And overall, I quite like it. It's slightly annoying that Nyssa spends a good chunk of this story just sitting around the TARDIS waiting for something to happen after Nyssa wasn't really in it before for Kinder. In fact, she was hardly in Kinder at all, a couple of scenes, one at the start, one at the end. So we're definitely starting to see the overcrowded TARDIS struggle a bit here. We're seeing writers struggle to give everybody something to do, which really, you know, when you think about it, four to Doomsday, for all its faults, at least everybody had something to do. I'm not saying that the characters were particularly well written in Four to Doomsday, where we discussed last time. But here we do kind of have, we're starting to see that Nyssa's not got a lot to do. You know, I think something drastic might have to happen to reduce the size of this TARDIS crew in the near future, maybe. Who knows? Visitation's fun enough. Terelectil's a great alien. Like, it's one of the best looking villains we have had so far. And everything around it is as well. That robot is beautiful. It looks great. The interior of its spaceship's your kind of standard 1980s overlit sets, but it's one of the better looking standard 1980s overlit sets. Some nice location filming, good use of woodland. I believe it's similar woodland to something else we've had recently. Is it the same woodland as Castrovalva or something like that? Either way, it does look really nice. So we've got some good location filming. We've got a really good alien villain. We've got a nice sort of traditional throwbacky plot. I think this works. The only thing I sort of will say is I'm not as in love with the character of Richard Mace as some people are. And the one thing we don't really need is an extra pseudo companion character, as, you know, like I say, we've already got a busy TARDIS. The story's probably better with him than it would be without him, but I don't know. It just kind of feels like it's a shame we're throwing in this whole new character when we're completely ignoring one of our regulars in this one. Not a bad story, not a favourite, but I'd say it's probably up there in the sort of better half of this season. That's enough for me. Let's ask Greg. What do you think of The Visitation, Greg?
Yeah, I think The Visitation has probably a slightly better reputation than it deserves. I don't think it's a bad story by any stretch of the imagination, but it definitely comes across, like you said, as written by somebody who just hasn't watched Doctor Who in a while. You see that in the lack of clarity and what to do with all the various companions and Nissa getting sidelined. And like you said, the setting, I mean, I'm pretty sure this is the first, you said season 15. I think this is the first like full on historical setting of a story since Horror of Fang Rock, I think. Like City of Death had a few scenes in the past, but it's primarily in the present. I can't think of another one since then. So that's a long time, and it's nice. I mean, it's something that Doctor Who did regularly, and to not see it at all for 4 years is kind of odd. So it's nice to have a story set in the past. But honestly, for me, the biggest issue with the Visitation is that it's not that much really happens in it. There are so many scenes where, you know, characters will enter the scene, start talking to each other, and then find themselves talking about either what just happened or describing what's around them, or basically just very repetitive kind of dialogue. There's lots of what's going on, Doctor. There's very little energy to it. Even when the android is destroyed, I mean, Nissa is just like sitting there. There's nothing kinetic about the story. It's very slow paced. It's very tedious. It's just not as exciting as I remember it being. Now, yeah, I mean, the side parts of it are very good. Like the creature design is fantastic. Like I love not only designing the pteroleptals, but like giving them injuries to reflect, you know, their crashed ship. Like that's really cool. They obviously make a big deal out of destroying the sonic screwdriver, which, you know, JNT wanted to get rid of and succeeded here. So there's the, and I agree too that, you know, Richard Mace kind of overcrowds the story, but at the same time, he gives it a little bit of character, and the over-the-top performance to me gives the story more energy that it desperately needs. So on balance, it's better with him than without him, I think. It's fine. You know, it's a perfectly fine Doctor Who story. There's nothing particularly impressive about it. There's nothing horrible about it. It's just kind of there, and it's a fun little trip back into the past, which we don't get very often. We'll see more of it now going forward, but, you know, King's demons and so forth. But yeah, I mean, this is kind of an oddity, and I don't know. I don't have much to say about it, honestly. It's fine. It's good. You know, I enjoyed it, but do I need to go back and watch it again? No.
Yeah, I'm kind of with you on that one. It's kind of, it is a Doctor Who story that happens, is the best way of describing it. It's not a Doctor Who story that happens badly. There's nothing too huge that you can, you know, kind of dive in and criticize. It's got the same little niggles that any other story would have. But it's just four parts of Doctor Who, and it's kind of Doctor Who from a template. You know, I don't think one template fits Doctor Who, but there are numerous templates for Doctor Who, and I'd say that this is one of them. So yeah, it's a story that happens. What about you, Jimmy? What are your thoughts on The Visitation?
I think I definitely enjoyed it more than you two. It's never going to be one of the great, exceptional, brilliant stories or whatever, but I think it's more than just average. I think it's good, solid, enjoyable. I quite liked it. I agree about Mace not being quite as brilliant as fandom often makes him out to be, but like, I think the story definitely needed him. I think it wouldn't have been the same without him, but yeah, I can definitely not see the other side where a lot of people are like, oh, he was better than the companions, he should have been in it more, and I'm like, no, he was needed here, he was good here, but don't overdo it, that was enough. Also, I think while Nissa didn't get much to do, she did get some good characterization in this story. There were a few little bits like that. There was this bit where the Doctor was talking about how he's going to twist the aliens' arms to convince them to leave, and she just gets that little, I hope they have arms to twist, very, very subtle, very dry humour, and it works because usually she's a bit more sort of comes across as emotionless sometimes, a bit sort of blander, and so it's nice when she gets those lighthearted sort of moments. And also I liked when she defeated the android. The scene wasn't great, as you were saying, but I did love the bit afterwards where she felt sorry for the android. And Adric's like, well, why? It was trying to kill you. And she's like, it was just doing what it was programmed to do. And her compassion there was really nice. And I think this story really shows how good Nyssa could be. Despite not giving her much to do, she is probably the companion who gets the best out of it, really. And what else? The other things that I like is with Tegan and Adric being a bit of a ass about Tegan and Nyssa being, oh, they're just girls, whatever. And but then when he feels bad when he has to escape and leave Tegan to stay caught, the sort of reaction, I think Matthew Waterhouse did a good job playing it. Like, you can see how conflicted he is, and like, you can see that he does care about them, and he's, you know, while he can act like a bit of a git a lot of the time, he does actually care about these people, and that's something that, you know, wasn't shown often enough through his era. I also loved the pteroleptals in their costumes. Like you said, that was really brilliantly done, and although it was a bit obvious when they had the line about, oh, the crash killed most of us, there were only three of us left, it's like, yep, okay, you explain why there's only three costumes. It just, you know, felt a bit obvious. But it was, I think it was quite good. There was also the fact that the Doctor got to be a bit more, how to put it, he was a bit more sort of snarky at various points, like the part where Adric pilots the ship to get back to him, and Nyssa is trying to compromise and be like, well, at least it saved you a long walk. And he's just, I like long walks. And then, oh, why were you searching for whatever? And did you know that was there? No, that's why I'm searching. Like, I think Five often gets painted as the nice one by fandom, but there's lots of little bits like that where, you know, he's very reserved and such, but he can be a bit of a grumpy bugger too, like, not to the extent that Six is going to be, for example, but like, he's definitely not as calm, quiet and reserved as people often sort of whitewash him as, if you think about it. The only other surprising bit with the Doctor was the bit where he breaks out of the prison and he shoots through the lock in the different space, and I never miss, and blowing the smoke out of the gun. It's like, okay, when did the Doctor start liking guns and being good with guns? What, like, I know way back in the Gunfighters, the Hartnell was saying about my collection, but like, this actually using one and actually, you know, commenting how good he is with it just seemed really odd. But again, other than that, there's not really much to say. I think it was a good story overall, but you definitely wouldn't want this sort of thing all the time. But I think I definitely enjoyed it more than you two. It's probably my favourite of the season.
I honestly don't think it's a bad story at all. I just think that it doesn't have a great deal to offer. One thing that's always kind of really surprised me is Big Finish haven't touched the pteroleptals, as far as I'm aware. But they seem like a villain that's just kind of obvious for bringing back. They are given a bit of a, you know, a bit of an interesting backstory. You know, they're a bit savage, but they have a love of art and culture and beauty and this kind of thing. You know, the pteroleptals we meet here are escaped prisoners. It just kind of feels like there's a bit of a world there waiting to be expanded on. You know, it could be worth having a look at pteroleptal culture at some point, because I do find them fascinating, and I do think they're actually quite a memorable villain, and we've had far less memorable villains come back. We'll move on to Black Orchid then, which is it's a curious one. We've got a historical again. You know, we're back in history, and this one is what's referred to in fandom as a pure historical. There's no alien menace. There's nothing like that. It's just things happen in the past that the TARDIS crew get caught up in. It's a fairly good story for, I'm going to say Sarah Sutton, but I'm not going to say Nyssa. She plays the dual roles, obviously. Nyssa still doesn't get particularly much to do, but never mind. Small niggle at this point. But it's nice. It's fairly simple. It's not really a murder mystery. We know who the murderer is from the start, and or early on at least. But it's got some good memorable characters. It looks nice. It sounds nice. It's almost like a TARDIS crew has a day off couple of episodes, and I appreciate it. I kind of enjoy what it does. It is a nice break from the sort of epic universe-destroying stuff that we had a few stories ago. I sort of wish there was more Doctor Who like this. Not a lot more, but something that just kind of, where the stakes are a bit lower, it's actually quite a personal story and all that kind of thing. It's good. Again, it's not going to set the world on fire. It doesn't do anything crazy or even particularly memorable, but I think I enjoy this one sort of slightly more than the rest of fandom, or a lot of fandom, I should say. I appreciate Black Orchid. It's a nice little oddity in the middle of not just this series, but I think this series and the series that came before. So yeah, I like Black Orchid. What about you, Greg?
I like it too. I mean, again, it's kind of in the same vein as Visitation. Like, it's good. Nothing wrong with it. What I do like is the 2-episode length, actually, because I think the only ones before this were Edge of Destruction and some Centauran Experiment. I think I might be wrong about that, but
Rescue.
I like the Rescue. Yes, the Rescue. But they do one of these per season for Davis, and they do this, and they do King's Demons, and they do The Awakening, and I mean, none of those are classic legendary Doctor Who stories, but I like sprinkling this in because you can tell these sort of shorter, less impactful stories and get a slightly different feel to it than, you know, just as we're getting right now, just four-parter after four-parter after four-parter. And I think that format works. I mean, I understand, like, the classic series, the classic format is 4 episodes, but I think the 2-episode stories do, you know, work because you've got to communicate everything in the length of time, which is now like a standard episode of TV. And yeah, so I think that works here pretty well. I agree with you. It's a good episode for Sarah Sutton. I mean, I'm not mistaking her for, you know, one of the great performers of our time, but I think she gets a little unfairly attacked in fandom. At least she used to. I know with the advent of Big Finish that changed, but like you can see in this story that like the way she plays Nyssa is in fact a choice, because the performance of the double here is played differently. I mean, it's obviously the same actor, but like she's imbuing the character with different characteristics, and you know, and that's it's the kind of thing you'd like to see more of, because when you basically only see an actor play one part and nothing else ever, you kind of have a hard time separating them from that part. And so just getting this little opportunity here is like, oh yeah, okay, so yeah, like she's playing Nyssa that way. It's not just the characteristic of all of her acting or anything like that. Let's see what else. I mean in terms of the plot, it's fine. You know, it's a little silly. Like the Doctor spends most of it wandering around in secret passages in the home, and then like at the end he's accused of murder. And he was just in these secret passages for like, God, I don't know, an hour or something. And he's like standing with Lady Cranley, and he's like, he never says like, I didn't kill him because I was not here, because I was in the secret passages with her for the last hour. You know, like I don't know why that excuse never crosses his mind to say, but yeah. And I mean, the plot's fine. I like the ending. I like how the doctor is almost able to talk George into, you know, but then when the brother approaches and he goes flying off the edge, it's good. You know, it's a fun little story. I'm kind of just rambling here because I don't have much sort of importance to say about it. But yeah, I mean, it's a good story. It's, you know, it's nice to have one that doesn't, you know, it is technically a pure historical. It's not really in the vein of the Hartnell historicals because there's nothing like historically significant about these events at all. It's completely made up. But it's nice to have something that isn't so focused on this, you know, the sci-fi aspects as well. Yeah, that's pretty much all I have. Black Orchid, yeah, it's solid. It's, you know, good way to pass 45 minutes.
I still think it's a shame that since 2005, Doctor Who hasn't attempted a pure historical whatsoever. There's always been an alien pop-up or something, and I think there's room for the format. I don't think we need one every year or whatever, but it can work, right?
I mean, I can't imagine them doing it all the time like they used to in the Hartnell days, but I don't see why they wouldn't try it as at least a one-off. Just, I mean, people love historic stuff. They love Downton Abbey and all that sort of thing, but and yet Doctor Who's a bit too shy to even try to risk it anymore. I'd love it as a one-off experiment, and, hey, maybe people would love it and it'd come back even more, but at least try it the once.
Yeah, and I think, too, like, when the show first came back, right, I know that RTD was very adamant that, like, you need to have, like, a strong science fiction element in every story. Like, that's what people are coming to watch. And fine, I get that. You know, you're not going to do, Marco Polo in episode two. Fine. But at the same time, we had 15 seasons of this show and 3/4 different producers, like, at some point, like, you know, I think the audience would have accepted the risk once in that amount of time, but what do I know?
Yeah, I think it's, then again, you know, this is the first time it had been done since the Highlanders, I think, so it's been a long, long gap between the Highlanders and this, so obviously it's something Doctor Who production teams don't favour, but I think one episode, it really isn't going to hurt anybody. And I think Black Orchid proves that it doesn't. Anyway, Jimmy, talk to us about Black Orchid.
This is an interesting one because I really enjoyed the story for the most part, but somehow most of the dot points I've given myself as notes are actually quibbles and problems. But I do enjoy the story. I think it's great to have a period piece. It's interesting to go back to the pure historical after so long. I like the way the TARDIS team are handled for the most part. But, yeah, there's a lot of weird things about it, like the Doctor just casually telling people he's a Time Lord and being happy to take the whole police force into his ship. It's just really bizarre. And the bit about the Doctor having liked trains and wanting to pilot one as a kid and, like, I mean, yeah, that feels in character for five, but not so much for the Doctor as a kid. Like, you can't imagine Hartnell as a kid being, you know, I want to drive trains. And the start is very slow, but I do enjoy the setup and the cricket game and all that. And I particularly like how Nyssa and Adric are utterly befuddled and confused by cricket, which is relatable as someone who's not into sports. And there's that funny bit with the Doctor's worried look when they tell him he's like the Master, the other Doctor, and then he realises they're talking about a historical figure. But, yeah, that was pretty good. But other nitpicks wise, there's, like, not just the telling people that he's a Time Lord and showing him his ship, there's this weird bit where when the Doctor's telling the police about what happened, he sounds all confused and he calls the Native American chap Ditoni, but then, like, only one or two scenes later, without anyone saying anything, he remembers his name perfectly, and it's just like, well, why did you put in him getting the name wrong? Like, was it an ad lib or was it meant to mean something? It just seemed a bit weird. But the worst part is the really bad handling with Anne being Mrs. Double, because she's getting married to this Lord guy or whatever, but they make this point, oh, wow, she's the exact double of Nyssa. Nyssa and her look exactly the same. And then when they all have their drinks, they call Nyssa a child. And they joke that with a Charles will marry the right girl. And it's like, hang on, she's the double of your wife and she's a child? What the hell? Like, did the script writers not think that through at all? That was just, yeah, that's really badly thought out.
It's I think we're at a stage in Doctor Who now where every story has some kind of fault. I don't know, does the level of little faults actually pop up in the 80s and sort of where does that come from, I guess? But it, you know, we're all agreed it's a fun little story despite this, and yeah. I do have quite a lot of time for Black Orchid. It's nice that it exists. I'm glad it does. So let's move on to Earthshock. I think this one might generate a bit of conversation. So Earthshock, it's obviously meant to be the showstopper of the season. It's they weren't messing about with this. They kept the Cybermen coming back as a surprise, and they kept Adric's death as a surprise. I believe they turned down a Radio Times cover just to sort of preserve all of this as well. And again, in the 80s, that was a big, big, big thing to do. I love this. I think it's absolutely amazing. I think it's a genuine achievement, sort of the way Doctor Who was produced and on the budget that Doctor Who was produced in the early 80s. I just think it's incredible that something that just looks as slick and well designed and well thought out as Earthshock works. Like, for once, the whole sort of dark and dullness works. And, you know, we get a lot of overlit 80s, and thankfully, this isn't part of it. This looks dark and dingy. The freighter is believable as this knackered old cargo freighter. Setting the first couple of episodes in caves is really effective. Like, it just feels claustrophobic and industrial and cramped, and that is what I want from a Cyberman story. It just sort of takes the atmosphere of those really creepy 60s Cyberman stories and turns it up to 11, and it just does it so, so effectively. There aren't many Doctor Who stories that I would say are close to flawless, but I think this is pretty damn close. It's, you know, near enough as close as you can get to a flawless Doctor Who story. I just, the pace of that final episode, like, Peter Grimwade isn't just the director, he's a magician. Like, he actually managed to make this happen, and I will never actually know how, like, the level of thought and planning that must have gone into it. There are a few things, obviously, niggly bits in there. Like, there's no looking past the fact that Beryl Reed is really, really miscast. I get that, you know, JNT liked his guest stars, but this one just didn't fit, which is a shame. But, you know, it doesn't ruin the story for me. It doesn't take me out of the story at all. I'm still completely invested with what's going on. David Banks of the Cyber Leader, absolutely fantastic. Like, I'm glad we're still getting Big Finish occasionally out of him now. This works well. Nyssa gets stuck in the TARDIS for most of the story, again. But it's not Nyssa's story, and the consequences of this story kind of open it up so that Nyssa gets a fair bit to do in her remaining stories anyway. So, yeah, I have a lot of time for Earthshock. I think it's really, really good. I don't think it's on the same level as some of the sort of standouts that we saw in season 18, but I definitely think it's the greatest achievement of season 19. So, Greg, talk to us about Earthshock.
Yeah, I said at the start of our last episode that Earthshock was my favorite, but I hadn't seen it in a while, so I wasn't 100% committed to that. Well, it is indeed my favorite story of the season after watching it again. It's incredibly good. It's kind of the defining story for the upcoming Sayward era of Doctor Who. because I think one of the issues with season 19 is that with, you know, Bidmead leaving, you know, pretty much after season 18, but still having an effect on some of the scripts of season 19 and obviously writing Castrovalva, like you get this kind of like tonal fluctuation. Like, you know, you know, like Kenda's an interesting story, but you know, you get four to Doomsday and the Visitation and Black Orchid. And it's like, what is this trying to be? Like, what are we going for here? With Earthshock, you get that defined, and it's incredibly well made. The music in it is absolutely fantastic. The, you know, the new Cyberman theme is so good. The redesigned Cybermen, I mean, these were basically my Cybermen growing up, because, you know, I didn't have black and white Doctor Who, and so it was either the 80s Cybermen or the Revenge Cybermen, so you can tell which one I preferred. These are my Cybermen. I love them. You know, the only thing is that they just completely do away with what was making them scary in the first place. Like, at no point in this story are we talking about converting people or anything like that. No, they just want to kill all humans. There's no subtlety here. There's no, you know, tragedy. No, they're just evil monsters that want to kill. And they're not really emotionless either. You know, I mean, I love David Banks. Don't get me wrong. It's, you know, and he plays it to the hilt. But from what we know about the Cybermen, the cyber leader should not be like clenching his fist and going, "Excellent!" Like, that's just, it's ridiculous. But again, it's a new era. It's redefining what they are, and I think for what it is, it works very well. The story is very well paced. It's very suspenseful. It's influenced by Alien in a few ways, most notably watching the tracker, the dots on the board and so forth, and they go for, you know, and that's really well executed. I really like the, you know, relationship that we see with the TARDIS crew. Like, this one again, like, pushes Nyssa to the side near the end and sticks her in the TARDIS, which is becoming a running gag at this point. But, you know, I think Matthew Waterhouse actually does a really good job in this story. I know his performances have, you know, been the subject of much mockery, but I think he's very good here. I think his delivery of his final line, "Now I'll never know if I was right," is perfectly chosen. Like, I was very impressed with him here. You actually have like a character arc for him. You actually like progress his relationship with the Doctor. And then, you know, at the very end, he dies. And it's a truly shocking moment, because this is pretty much the only time in the history of Doctor Who that a long-running companion televised Doctor Who, that a long-running companion is just dead. Right. I mean, yeah, we had Katarina, who was there for, what, 5 total episodes. And we had Sarah Kingdom, who didn't exist outside of the Dalek's master plan. And I mean, even in the new series, like, yeah, I mean, Clara died, but then at the end, she was, you know, going around and having infinite adventures in time and space before her eventual death.
Well, that's all right then.
Yeah, exactly. And, you know, like, Bill is killed, but they make the point that, you know, she's still surviving in whatever the computer system from Twice Upon a Time. Well, that's all right then, same thing. But yeah, I mean, this is the only time when it's just been like, nope, he's dead, that's it. And it's truly shocking, like, because you don't see it coming. It's just this is not something that Doctor Who does. And it leans into it, you know, like the silent credits with just the picture of the broken star. Like, it's incredibly impactful and effective, and it works very well. Yeah, I think it's a great story. It's one of the best of the Fifth Doctor's era. It's clearly the best of this season. Oh, and you know, to the Beryl Reed thing, like maybe it's because like I'm not as I don't know. She seems like a more notable figure in Britain than she is in the U.S. But I mean, I had no idea who she was. And yeah, it's a little weird having this like old lady as you know as a starship captain, but like she's fine. Like I don't think it's embarrassing or anything. Like you know whatever. Like she obviously doesn't know what's going on, but like that's okay. I don't know. But anyway, great story, great story. Easily for me the best of the year. And yeah, just kind of redefining what Doctor Who is, what Doctor Who can do for the next few seasons.
I have to admit, like I've never particularly heard of Beryl Reed outside of this. I mean, this is probably a, you know, my age thing. I wasn't around when all this was being made, but I do struggle to buy her as this sort of hardened marine, which is what the character's meant to be. Because you're right, she is just sort of this little old lady. Like I say, it what's going on around it is just so damn good that it doesn't really matter, is always the way I've seen it. Anyway, Jimmy, talk to us about Earthshock.
Yeah, this one is interesting. I do enjoy it quite a lot, but I think it went down a bit in my estimation on this view because it had been a long time since I last saw it, and there were a lot of good points and things I enjoyed and liked and felt they did well, but there was also more stuff that I thought didn't than I'd remembered in past. I love the atmospheric opening and how great that stuff with the caves is before the TARDIS team arrive. I think the actual opening TARDIS scene is, I think they did a lot of good stuff there, like the foreshadowing of the line about Adric plotting the course to his own destruction and so on. And the bit about the Doctor being curious about, oh, I wonder what that asteroid was. Like, they're foreshadowing things right from the start. But, yeah, it does mean that the story is a bit slow to get started. But when it does get started, it's great. I think that initial cliffhanger must have been amazing back at the time with no idea that the Cybermen were coming back. Of course, the Cybermen aren't exactly what they were anymore because, as you say, they're more sort of generic monsters and they're just too emotional. I mean, It was so weird having them just, talking like normal, and the two cyber guards later in the story that look like they're just chatting while Tegan and the others are trying to get past, and so emotional. It's just, it never makes sense when the Cybermen are emotional, and the 80s did it so much. At least it wasn't as emotional or bad as in the new series when Matt Smith becomes the cyber planner and hams it up more than Soul did, but that is a whole level worse, but this is, the 80s Cybermen just don't work for me. I like the look. I think the voice is okay, but the too much emotion thing ruins it for me, unfortunately. I did like the scene of the Doctor and Adric making up later on in the story, and there was this nice little bit of the music where they did a little variation on the Doctor Who theme when the Cyber Leader first sees the TARDIS, and that sort of stuff was good, but there's some other more mixed bits, like the most of the foreshadowing I mentioned earlier about Adric works really well, but then you get a bit that doesn't in the bit where they're talking in the ship about, you could hide an army down here and they wouldn't find it. And it's like, that's sledgehammer subtlety. Like, come on, guys, that's a bit too ridiculous. The other weird thing with the Cybermen is the bit, their sort of reactions to the Time Lords, like they don't seem to... Well, the leader does seem to know the Doctor like he's met him before in some bits, but from what they're saying, but at the same time, like he didn't recognise him. But then you've got the lines about a Time Lord, they're forbidden to interfere, and, the arrogance of a Time Lord. And it's like, how many Time Lords other than the Doctor have you guys met? Because they seem more familiar with the concept of Time Lords than they do with the Doctor as an individual, and it's a bit weird, like... I don't know what they were going with there. Like, I just, maybe they weren't thinking it through, but really odd. The other odd thing with Cybermen then is there's this bit at the end of episode 3 and start of episode 4 where you've got the mirrors to make it look like there's more Cybermen than they are. And at the end of episode 3, they leave the shot a bit too long and like one of the Cybermen's arms half disappears. But in the recap at the start of episode 4, they cut it before that moment. It's like, well, why didn't you fix it on episode 3 as well? And like I was watching the special effect improved DVD version, and so it was like, why didn't you fix it on that, even if they couldn't fix it at the time? But I think the Cyber Leader, despite not liking the emotional stuff, was handled pretty well in the bits in the last episode and his arguments with the Doctor. I think it worked for him there, and like they had the line about him being positively flippant, and so it's like, maybe I could buy it if it were just the one, but like all the Cybermen are basically the same now, and it's just, yeah, it's not very satisfactory. I do think they executed Adric's death well, and they got a lot of really good emotional drama there. That was great. And I'm so glad, like, apparently behind the scenes they were thinking of killing Nyssa instead of him, and I'm so glad it worked out the way it did, because I absolutely love Nyssa, whereas Adric is, he was great, pretty great with the Fourth Doctor, and he was pretty good in Earthshock, but the rest of his time with Five, it was like, oh, no, can't wait for him to go. So the one other thing I'll point out is this weird thing in the end when the freighter starts travelling back in time, and I know they needed it for the plot convenience of, oh, it's going to be the asteroid that destroys the dinosaurs, but they're like, well, how can it travel through time? Oh, it's plugged into the Cybermen machine. It can do anything. And it's like, okay, when did the Cybermen get time travel? I mean, I know they will by the next time they come back alongside Six, but, well, not the next time because they're in the Five Doctors, but you know what I mean. But, yeah, it's just weird that they have, oh, they can just time travel now. So can anything they plug their machine into. It's all good. Like, I do enjoy the story, but there's, yeah, those plot holes, the emotional Cybermen, it's not as great as I remembered it being. I do still like it, but, yeah, I used to love it when I was younger, and so I'm a bit sad that it's gone down in my estimation. But, yeah, it's not terrible or anything. It's just not as good as I used to think it was.
See, there's nothing to say the Cybermen don't have time travel. Like, I'm all right with that one, actually. Like, and as you say, they do definitely have time travel in Attack of the Cybermen. They know who Time Lords are. You kind of have to do a bit of time travel to know that. I'm going to say that I'm okay with the time travel. But, yeah, fair points. Yeah. Time flight. we're moving on to time flight. So, time flight does about as many things wrong as Earthshock does right. One thing I don't think it does as badly as its sort of reputation suggests is kind of brush off the events of Earthshock. You know, the Doctor says, right, everyone's home now. Let's not be too sad about Adric. He wouldn't have wanted it. And that's it. They crack on. And it's a balance, isn't it? You know, do you want a character sulking about the loss of another character forever and ever and ever? I'm looking at all of the Rose throwbacks in series 3 of New Who. Or do you just want Doctor Who to get on and have more adventures? Like, the nature of Doctor Who kind of doesn't allow for sulking about a character that died last week. So yeah, it's a funny one. Like, Doctor Who doesn't kill off its characters, so on the one time where it did, it kind of didn't really know how to handle that as well. Ultimately, it needs to get on and tell a story. Unfortunately, that story is Time Flight. A lot of times, while we've been doing this season by season, I've said something along the lines of, I don't think this one deserves the negative reputation that it has. I'm not going to say that here. Time Flight deserves the kicking it gets. There is so little to redeem this. And, you know, I've heard people say, oh, well, it would have been so much better if Peter Grimwade had got to direct it as well as write it. And a lot of the problem is the direction. And don't get me wrong, a lot of the problem is the direction. But on a writing level, what the hell is going on? Like, the Master's in costume for no apparent reason. Okay, the Master dresses up. That's established. He likes his disguises. Fine. There's always been a reason for it in the past. There just is not here. He stood in a room on his own putting on a really racist accent for no apparent reason, pretending that he's magic for no apparent reason. Absolutely none of it makes sense. I kind of like the cliffhanger at the end of part two where it turns out it is the master, because why not? It's a good old reveal. But like, the master's plan doesn't make a lot of sense. You know, the Concorde stuff's nice. The Heathrow Airport stuff's nice. It's a pretty good story for Tegan. She gets to, you know, be her most Tegan in this one. But I'm just... I've watched it recently and I can't actually tell you what's going on. You know, the Master's trying to sort his TARDIS out. There's an ancient race involved. It's all been messed up somehow. Yeah, it happens. And, you know, there was a Concorde abandoned on prehistoric Earth. How any of our characters are sort of alive after being on prehistoric Earth is a mystery. There are some memorable characters in it, I guess. You know, the flight crews are quite nice. I think Professor Hayter's a good character. He's killed off way too early. The regulars are good. You know, I like the Doctor in this. I like Tegan in this. I like Nyssa in this. I think Adric's cameo is a really good idea, sort of. And, you know, we get a couple of other throwbacks as well. Throwing the Melker in is particularly effective and also kind of signposting the Master pretty heavily. But yeah, it just doesn't work. It falls apart pretty quickly and stays falling apart. Yeah, the money's run out. The script isn't great. It's the wrong director for the script in the first place. The sets look awful. The Master's plan doesn't make sense. I'm not, unfortunately, a big Time Flight fan. Be interesting to see if either of you contradict me here. I'm suspecting not. But go ahead, Greg. Talk to us about Time Flight. You take the burden.
Do I have to?
No. Jimmy, you'll go.
I can go ahead. Geez. Yeah, it's not good. There's very little to redeem the story. It's a good story for Tegan. It's nice to actually, you know, it feels a little forced because of this, I guess, but it's nice to actually have her, you know, get to, you know, do something as a flight attendant, because she's been wearing that uniform the entire time she's been in the TARDIS. So, I mean, yeah, give her something to do with it. Nyssa actually gets stuff to do in this, although she spends most of it in some kind of hypnotic trance. There's that awful, like, shot where they ask Sarah Sutton to look into the camera and, like, put her hands on her face like it's Home Alone and do a scream, and it's just, ugh, like, no, why are you, no, that's not bad. Oh, man. The other thing that's notable about it is this is the first time, this whole season basically has been the first time in Doctor Who that events of previous stories actually impact future ones, and not everything is just completely standalone. And of course, at the end of Earthshock, we had perhaps the greatest shock in the history of Doctor Who when Adric was killed. And so we begin this story, you know, seeing how our characters are going to react and recover from this tragic loss. And they get about 3 minutes of emotional acting and showing, you know, and the Doctor has to, in his sadness, angrily shout down his companion's idea, you know, to go back and rescue Adric, because that's the one thing they can never do. And this is all good. Like, it's all great. And then he says, Adric is dead and we must accept that. And he wouldn't want us to mourn unnecessarily. Now let's go on vacation. And then that's it. Like, later in the story, when a ghost of Adric appears, like, there's no emotional response from Tegan and Nyssa at all. They're just like, well, that's obviously not him because he's dead. And it's like, oh, okay. I see how much you miss him. So that is just abominably handled. Really nothing here works. Like, the story doesn't make any sense. Like, yeah, there's, you know, okay, cool. It's Concord, I guess. Like, that was neat back then. We haven't had them for decades now, so it's not anything that's, you know, interesting or remarkable to modern viewers. The stuff in the airport's fine. I prefer the faceless ones, though, for airport action. The plasmatons, I still don't know what they are. I don't know what the purpose of them was. I don't know what the Xerophon are there for. Why is the master dressed up as a racist caricature of an Arab magician? I don't know. I have no idea. Why is his costume designed to, like, leak green stuff out of its face to show you that he's dying, and then he just takes it off and stands like, I don't know. It's funny too, like, the master is like this grand revelation. And I mean, to be fair, like, it is hard to pick out Anthony Ainley in that costume. But it was just funny because, like, my wife watched sometimes sit on the couch and, you know, be doing other stuff while I'm watching this. And she's, like, kind of watching parts of episode one, and Khalid is moving around on screen. And again, this is not someone who's a diehard fan of the classic series. This is not someone who could pick Anthony Ainley out of a lineup or recognize his voice or anything. But after, like, 30 seconds of Khalid, she's like, this is really weird. That has to be the master in disguise. I was like, how? But then, you know, you think about it and it's like, yeah, that's exactly the kind of stupid nonsense he would do. I don't know. I mean, I guess they had to put something on television, but I mean, oh God, just end the season with Adric's death and don't even bother with this. Like, what are we doing? Just bad, 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 bad Doctor Who. And it's rare for the show to be bad, but this is a prime example. I don't care for it.
What about you, Jimmy?
Oh, it's definitely terrible and definitely the worst Davison story, but I think the worst thing is that you can see the hints of potential in it at some points. And, like, I think the thing that really stuffs it is they're sort of trying to tell two separate stories at once. Like, The first episode, until the master in his racist disguise appears, up till that moment, it's actually not that bad. But then when he comes in and he's got the weird costume and there's no reason for it and all that stuff you've already said, and that sort of ruins it. And then they throw in at the end the Xerophon and all the stuff about them. And I think, like, you could have easily split this into two separate coherent stories and had time to tell them both. You could have done two-parters. Like, you could have done, oh, the master's trapped at the start of time and he's hijacking a plane to get out of there somehow. Yeah, okay, great. And then you could have done a separate story of, oh, here's this alien race whose planet got destroyed and they've merged into one single psychic being and, oh, how are we going to deal with this? Yeah, great. But they tried to tell both stories at once and they rushed them really badly and execute them really badly. And, I mean, the result is bad. I mean, we all agree on this. But, like, I think there was potential in there and that, you know, given better script editing or better writing, like, I think that it could have been good, and that's why it's really a shame that it absolutely isn't. But, yeah, I think I agree that Tegan getting more to do was great, and getting to – I love the bit where she just goes into work mode and sets the passengers getting onto the ship just like she's doing her normal stewarding, and that sort of thing was good. But, yeah, it's just – they don't give enough for – Nyssa to do, they have her possessed most of the time. But the Adric cameo, I agree, was a nice sort of touch and they did well there. And the Melker foreshadowing the master was a good idea. But I think they could have, as you say, done more with Adric and maybe had them conflicted. And the Pterolepter was a bit random. It's like, yeah, we've just had them not long ago. Let's throw them in too. Like, it didn't make sense that, like, And they were already not scared, knowing everything was an illusion by then, so it just seemed to be dragging it out for nothing. But and I think it might have inspired five Doctor scenes with the fake companions on some level. But yeah, the five Doctors did it better, basically. The only other thing that I would say is that hang on, where's my bit in the notes gone? Oh yeah. I do think at the start they handle Adric's death well, because yeah, they do get over it a bit quick, but like the way the Doctor is absolutely enraged and horrified about the idea of change of time, like I think you can understand why they're both a bit put off of saying anything afterwards, and like sure, we're going to go on vacation's a bit silly, but like I think they handled it well for, you know, the limited time before you can actually start the new story. I think they did the best they could there, and I think it worked just about for me. But yeah, mostly terrible, terrible story. The one real positive is Tegan leaving at the end, giving them the gap for Big Finish to do all the solo Nissa stories and give her more to do and flesh her out. Like, we really lucked out with, oh, let's have Tegan leave at the end of this season and join again at the start of next season. Like, it was a bit silly at the time, perhaps, but for Big Finish it worked wonders, and Nissa's my favourite fifth Doctor companion, so I'm glad it worked out the way it did. So, yeah, that's the one small positive out of all of it.
You know, I was just thinking, this kind of makes me think of, like, this might have been halfway decent in the Pertwee era. Like, because it kind of feels like a third Doctor story in some ways. Like, the Doctor is all of a sudden using his unit credentials out of nowhere, and the TARDIS doesn't really factor into the story very much. And, you know, when we start on present day Earth and we have this, you know, scheme by the Master, and I don't know, I obviously would have to be a ground up rethink, but I think the structure here would have fit in much better in season 8 or season 9.
Interesting point. Like, it's, yeah, I can see it kind of floating around the Time Monster. Which isn't a compliment to Time Flight or the Time Monster. But yeah, I see your point. Okay, I'm going to throw this one at you both. As we mentioned, it is very, 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 very firmly asserted by the Doctor that they cannot go back and change events and rescue Adric. Can they?
I think... I get what they were trying to do of, we need an excuse for him not to go back, and Davison sort of sells it with the delivery that you believe he means it and you believe he can't, but it doesn't sort of make much sense. Like, yeah, sure, if they were going to stop the freighter crashing and save the dinosaurs and change the whole of history, I could get the you can't change that, but like Tegan basically says, can't we just, you know, pick Adric out a moment before it crashes? And it's like, well, okay, why can't you? But of course, you know, to really delve into that, they'd need to have a whole discussion and blah, 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 work out the rules of time travel, have the dialogue about it. It would have been boring. It would have been confusing. It would have been... So, like, I can totally buy that it was meant that the Doctor couldn't do it, but whether he actually could, like, who knows? Maybe if he was in more of a tenth Doctor Time Lord Victorious mode and stuck the rules, I'm going to do it anyway. But I absolutely believe that, for whatever reason, whether it's the mechanics of time travel or something else, I could absolutely buy that the Fifth Doctor couldn't do it.
Yeah, I feel like, obviously, the intent of the story is that he can't do it. Now, I think, like, by, you know, the rules of time travel, such as they are in Doctor Who, I think that they could have saved him, just because their experience was watching the freighter explode on the monitor. They don't actually see Adric be consumed by fire or whatever. They just see the ship blow up. So their knowledge of these events, their experience of these events is just watching the ship blow up. So there's no reason why they couldn't just pull Adric off of the ship and then it still blows up. Now, I think you can go to a more meta level and say that while they didn't watch it, we, the audience, watched Adric blow up in the explosion. So we would be changing the audience's history. Maybe that's part of it. But I think if we're just getting in this in terms of the rules of the show, then yeah, they probably could have gone and saved him. But at the same time, the clear intent is that they can't. And so you have to default to that, because nitpicking based on rules that are either established decades before this or won't be established for decades after this is just, that's just fan thinking. That's not, you know, based in the actual fiction.
But yeah, that was kind of a point. It's kind of, I'm fairly sure that has been contradicted in Doctor Who at some point. I'm fairly sure, you know, characters have been saved, someone's gone back and saved them and all this kind of thing.
I mean, it has even happened with Adric, the boy that time forgot. The Fifth Doctor subconsciously, accidentally goes back and solves Adric dying, and it all ends horribly. But, I mean, they did actually do this in Big Finish. It's not even just a possibility. It's an action story we already have.
Stephen Moffat does a lot of the time travel stuff. I mean, there's a lot of, like, you know, River jumps out of a, you know, window knowing that, like, the Doctor will come save her, because later on he'll, you know, find out that she jumped out the window and go back. And that's not quite, that's kind of the paradox in the opposite direction. But even by those rules, though, I mean, if we're getting technical, I think they could have saved him, but.
I guess the point to finish on then is Adric himself. We've lost another companion pretty epically. You know, he gets a very memorable way out. I think Adric is far more of a remembered character than perhaps he would have been had Earthshock not happened. So it's just a case of any final thoughts that either of you would like to add about Adric. Do you want to go first, Greg?
I think Adric is a little unfairly maligned by fandom, just because, like, in season 18, he's fine. Like, he's a good character. Like, yeah, I mean, he has his moments of selfishness and, you know, going over to the other side and so forth. But, I mean, you can definitely, like, the relationship he has with the Doctor and Romana, it really works. Like, it's really good, and it makes sense. And then when you get into season 19, after Castrovalva, like, you hit forward to Doomsday and they decide, oh, Adric is also a jerk and he's a sexist. And it's like, what? Okay, well, now, yeah, I don't like him. But, like, why did you do that? You know, so I think they do his character kind of a disservice in parts of his time in the Davison era. But, I mean, And it's certainly true that Matthew Waterhouse was not a skilled performer at this point in his career. But, you know, ultimately, I never understood the, like, I hate him, he's the worst companion of all time. Like, he's fine. You know, I've said that a lot about this season. It's fine. But, like, I don't know. I always kind of had a soft spot for him, I guess. I don't know.
Yeah, I see what you're saying. Like, I really don't think there's anything particularly bad about Adric. He definitely has his moments, and that original Artful Dodger intention absolutely disappears out the window. I don't think he survives the regeneration very well, but generally I'd say most companions don't work as well with their second Doctor as they did their first. If they go through a regeneration, there are exceptions to this. You know, Sarah Jane Smith, Polly and Ben, that kind of thing. But, you know, I kind of prefer Perry with the Fifth Doctor, and I prefer Mel with the Sixth Doctor. I prefer Rose with the Ninth Doctor. I prefer Clara with the 11th Doctor. So it's, yeah, at the end of the day, when a companion's put together, that character is created to complement the Doctor of the day. You know, these characters aren't designed to work with the next Doctor. And I think Adric may be a victim of that, probably the worst victim of that, maybe. But yeah, ultimately, I think the character gets a bit of an unfair thrashing from fandom. Anything you want to add, Jimmy?
Yeah, there's not really much more you can say. He was really well handled in the Tom Baker era and definitely went downhill in Davison's. I think the only real positive is that Earthshock sort of, yeah, gave him that famous ending, and he was characterized a bit better in it, and his dynamic with the other companions and with the Doctor was a bit better in it. And so I think, like, I think if he'd just left in a normal story and still been as annoying and awful as he was in the early Fifth Doctor era in his last story, then I think, you know, he'd have been a lot worse off and people would have hated him. But I think Earthshock really saved him in a way, because it sort of reminded us how good he could be and, you know, killed him on a high note rather than on a crappy ending. So I think things worked out for the best in the end with him.
Yeah, I think Earthshock kind of making the character legendary has kind of helped. I also think that, you know, Matthew Waterhouse does some wonderful stuff with Big Finish now, and he's even written a couple of audio novels. They're both very, very good, very enjoyable. He reads them incredibly well. He's a good writer. He's a good performer. And, you know, okay, maybe he wasn't when he was 18, 19, 20 or whatever it was back then, but, you know, I'm really, really glad we are still getting Adric stuff now, and I think it's very good. I think we get some really good Adric stuff now. There's a season of the Fourth Doctor adventures set in eSpace, so it's the Doctor, Romana, Adric and K-9, and there's some absolutely cracking stuff for Adric in there. It keeps the sort of brattishness, you know, he stomps off and leaves the TARDIS when he falls out with the Doctor and Romana and all that kind of thing, but he gets some really, really great moments. And as I said when we were talking about season 18, I think he and K-9 have an absolutely fantastic relationship, and it's a shame that that only lasted for really a story and a half, two stories. Season 9. Oh, go on.
I was just going to say, also with Matthew Waterhouse, there's a series of Dark Shadows audios that Big Finish did that he's in, and he is excellent in that. I mean, really good. And I was kind of, at the time, I was a little bit taken aback by it, because he hadn't been in a ton of Doctor Who Big Finish stuff at that point. And it was like, wow, okay. So yeah, this is someone we're very good, very happy to have on side now.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's, in some ways, it's a shame he came to Big Finish late, but in other ways, we've got some really good stuff with Adric. So I'm quite happy. Well, we'll leave it there. Obviously, next time we're looking at the 20th anniversary, season 20. There's a returning villain in every single story, and I'm looking forward to it. I quite like season 20. I think I get the impression people tend to prefer 19 to 20. I think I'm more of a 20 fan than I am a 19 fan. But we will cross that bridge next time we do one of these. In the meantime, I will say thank you and goodbye to Greg.
Thank you and goodbye, and I am looking forward to see if the Master escapes from Zarathas.
Indeed, he might be trapped there forever. And thank you and goodbye to Jimmy.
Thanks, it's been good.
And we'll be back for more Spodcasting and more season by season very soon. Goodbye now.